The long summer has faded now, and soon the first days of November will mark the beginning of the coming of winter. The days will go shorter and possibly, you never know in Southern California, but possibly cooler. The weather unsettled and the evenings will be suddenly dark. At Halloween, in acknowledgement of seasonal transition and loss, our children play with death and fear. Although for most people nowadays, Halloween is a secular holiday that has lost its religious association with saints and souls of the beloved dead, there are clearly still many people around the globe who celebrate festivals of the dead, many of them at this time of the year.
All Saints' Day is celebrated on November 1st by parts of Western Christianity in honor of all those who have passed on, saints known and unknown. The chosen date for the event may have been an attempt to supplant the pagan holiday of Samhain, which means summer's end, and is a celebration of the end of the harvest and the start of the coldest half of the year.
Maybe.
All Saints' Day is closely tied with All Souls' Day, the Roman Catholic Day of Remembrance, for friends and loved ones who have passed away. In the Americas, particularly Mesoamerica, European colonization merged with pre-existing indigenous traditions to form Día de los Muertos. Yes, the Day of the Dead. A festive celebration in memory of those who have died. If we were members of traditional Mexican families, we might have a picnic on the graves of our family members, celebrating, remembering, and honoring. Though we may be far from grave sites of our ancestors, we can still honor those who have gone before us. We will do so in a moment by inviting any who wish to come forward and silently light a candle for their own beloved dead.
At this darkening time of the year, our thoughts turn to things past, to life retreating, to those who are no longer with us, to our hopes, and to our fears. Images come to our minds, spooky ones associated with the season, but also of dear companions who once graced our lives, loved ones whom we miss, persons whose lives made an impact on our lives, of all those who were here, contributing, caring, and now gone.
Our memories bring both joy, sadness, and even fear of the unknown. Let us not push these feelings away, for our recollections attest to the enduring importance of these friends, this love, our memories. May these brave and lovely spirits live again in our tender thoughts and prove that death and distance are powerless to sever the bonds that connect truly loving hearts. And now, during our time of silent reflection, as you listen to the wind chimes marking the changing to the darker half of the year, I invite you to come forward and light your own candle for those who you would honor and remember.
There are candles on this side of the sanctuary and candles here. There are sticks you can light them with, as well as lighters. So we invite you forward at this time.
In the struggles we choose for ourselves, in the ways we move forward in our lives and bring our world forward with us, it is right to remember the names of those who gave us strength in this choice of living. It is right to name the power of hard lives well lived. We share a history with those lives. We belong to the same motion. They too were strengthened by what had gone before. They too were drawn on by the vision of what might come to be. Those who lived before us, who struggled for justice and suffered injustice before us, have not melted into the dust and have not disappeared. They are with us still. The lives they lived hold us steady. Their words remind us and call us back to ourselves. Their courage and love evoke our own. We, the living, carry them with us. We are their voices, their hands, and their hearts. We take them with us, and with them choose the deeper path of living. Let us remember those we have loved and those who have loved us. May our gratitude be a jack-o'-lantern amidst the darkness in our lives, softening our fears. Let us know that we are not alone in our questions of grief and uncertainty. And let us also come to that peaceful place in which we can take what we learned from those who have gone before us into our own lives. Remind us that we too are mortal, and that the only enduring legacy we leave is the love that shines through our lives, a love that counteracts disappointment, sadness, and fear. May it be so. If we could literally reach into you and remove all your fears, every one of them, how different would your life be? Think about it. If nothing stopped you from following your dreams, your life would probably be very different. This is what the dying learn. Dying makes our worst fears come forward to be faced directly. It helps us see the different life that is possible, and in that vision takes the rest of our fears away. Unfortunately, by the time the fear is gone, most of us are too far gone to do those things we would have done before, had we not been afraid. Thus, one lesson becomes clear. We must transcend our fears while we can still do those things we dream of. To transcend fear, though, we must move somewhere else emotionally. We must move into love. Happiness, anxiety, joy, resentment. We have many words for the many emotions we experience in our lifetimes, but deep down, at our core, there are only two emotions, love and fear. All positive emotions come from love, all negative emotions from fear. From love flows happiness, contentment, peace, and joy. From fear comes anger, hate, anxiety, and guilt. It's true that there are only two primary emotions, love and fear, but it's more accurate to say that there's only love or fear, for we cannot feel these two emotions together at exactly the same time. They're opposites. If we're in fear, we're not in a place of love. When we're in a place of love, we cannot be in a place of fear. Can you think of a time when you've been in both love and fear? It's impossible. We have to make a decision to be in one place or the other. There's no neutrality in this. If you don't actively choose love, you will find yourself in a place of either fear or one of its component feelings. Every moment offers the choice to choose one or the other, and we must continually make these choices, especially in difficult circumstances, when our commitment to love instead of fear is challenged. Having chosen love doesn't mean you will never fear again. In fact, it means that many of your fears will come up to finally be healed. This is an ongoing process. Remember that you will become fearful after you've chosen love, just as we become hungry after we eat. We must continually choose love in order to nourish our souls and drive away fear, just as we eat to nourish our bodies and drive away hunger.
And in just a minute in this sermon, I'm going to talk about how I don't quite agree with the author of the reading, in the sense that I do think love and fear can coexist. I think we're experiencing that in this moment, you know? I absolutely do. I think that it's, as I'll talk about, it's where we ground ourselves when we do experience that fear, because fear is a natural emotion, and it's actually a good one. It's one of the things that keeps us safe, that helps us to respond to situations like this one today. So I want to start with an old poem, and I wonder if any of you have heard this before. Once there was a little boy who wouldn't say his prayers, so he went to bed at night away upstairs. His mammy heard him holler, and his daddy heard him bawl, and when they turned the covers down, he wasn't there at all. And they seeked him in the rafter room and cubby hole and press, and seeked him up the chimney flue, and everywhere, I guess. But all they ever found was just his pants and roundabout, and the goblins will get you if you don't watch out. Now that's a piece from a much longer poem by James Whitcomb Riley, the story of a little orphan Annie who comes to stay and scares the children with her stories. Each of those stories end with that refrain of the goblins will get you if you don't watch out. Now Riley is almost a forgotten poet today. But in Indiana, where he lived during his lifetime, enjoying his national superstar status, he was still a pretty big thing back when I was a kid. And every year in elementary school, Halloween wasn't Halloween if the teacher hadn't lowered the lights and read that poem against the backdrop of blazing crimson and gold fall leaves on the trees outside the school windows. We loved being scared in that way, begging to hear the poem one more time. We kids weren't alone. We need only look round at the plethora of horror novels and films to know people get a certain enjoyment out of being afraid, albeit in controlled circumstances. Bruno Bettelheim's book, The Uses of Enchantment, talks about how fairy tales have often been unfortunately sanitized by the likes of Disney, and they actually need their original grim and gruesome parts because they help children manage certain existential problems such as separation anxiety and sibling rivalries. The extreme violence and tortured emotions of many fairy tales serve to deflect the struggles that may be going on in a child's mind. Now, while adults are no doubt operating with more sophisticated models of thinking, I think this can nonetheless hold true for us as well. Stories that engage with our fears also draw upon our deepest, most primal feelings. But in watching a movie or reading a novel, we know we are essentially safe, that we can stop watching or reading any time, that the world our imagination is inhabiting is a pretend one, an exaggerated reflection of the real world. In her horror novel, The Mummy, Anne Rice dedicates the book this way. To my father, Howard O'Brien, who came more than once to get me from the neighborhood picture show when The Mummy had scared me so badly that I couldn't even stay in the lobby with the creepy music coming through the doors. So, of course, Rice grew up to become this woman who couldn't sit through a scary movie as a teen. She grew up to become a best-selling writer of novels about vampires and witches and other things that go bump in the night. She also writes novels about religious figures, particularly her Christ the Lord series, and the leap between these two genres actually doesn't seem so great. Both engage with the supernatural, both paint a portrait of life that is heightened beyond our everyday understanding, both tend to deal with the places of darkness in our own souls. Our great Unitarian writers of the 18th century, 19th century, inhabited this place frequently in their work. I'm thinking of the religious and ghostly exploration of authors like Elizabeth Gaskell, Nathaniel Hawthorne, with his House of the Seven Gables, Charles Dickens, Louisa May Alcott. Significant portions of their literary output is devoted to the shadow places of life. Evocative images like spooky New England houses barely lit with the glow of candlelight, family curses and histories passed down from generation to generation, specters of loss, both haunting and friending mere mortals in Gothic churchyards. And so this morning, as we deal with our own fears with the situation, we see that help has arrived, which we are very grateful for. So we will do our best to kind of stand back and let those folks do what they need to do to make sure that this situation is under control. And so today, as we've journeyed through this service of the unexpected, as so often happens, we began with our exploration of those scary parts of life, and we've looked at the shadow places in our souls. Our children had fun this morning trick-or-treating in honor of Halloween, and then we deepened this experience by exploring the traditions that get us in touch with our fears around loss. Because is there anything scarier than loss, really? Loss of freedom, loss of life, loss of health, loss of relationship, loss of love, all these things are scary. No wonder Halloween goblins and vampires have an attraction in our world, huh? They're fairy tales in their way. In their way to help us process the deeper fears of loss that are triggered by life's real challenges, like someone in our myths who is hurting. I'll take a vampire story over that any day. Speaking of life's challenges, Thursday in Brea, a couple hundred demonstrators showed up at Representative Ed Royce's office to talk about their very real fears, fears that have nothing to do with fairy tales. They were there to say that they wanted protection for TPS, temporary protected status, available since 1990 to those who are unable to safely return to their home country because of ongoing armed conflict, environmental disasters, or other frightening conditions. Under the current administration, this status is in danger. In California alone, there's about 50,000 people that this affects, and they're living in fear that they will be sent back to their home countries, places where they may not survive, where things that go bump in the night are truly present and truly deadly. And so during this peaceful protest on Thursday, right in Brea, our neighbors, these demonstrators were crossing the road, and an impatient driver decided he'd had enough, and so he stepped on the gas. 12 demonstrators were hospitalized. Now, there was no loss of life or major injuries that I know of, but what that push to the gas pedal did was to create an atmosphere of even more fear. Beyond those very real fears about the status of TPS and DACA, these folks are wondering if it's even safe for them to come out and protest peacefully. And so I got the call that they needed, really specifically, white clergy that can show up. And so I spoke at a news conference in Brea, and every news source you can imagine was there on Friday. And the theme was that we won't accept this kind of violence, that people with brown skin are not lesser than, that the violence seen in places like Charlottesville will not be tolerated here. And as I listened to the other speakers, I heard that recurring theme of fear of loss. Loss of family, loss of home, loss of safety, loss of agency. And people have good reason to be scared. So what about that reading I selected today that says that love is the counterpoint to this? That really there is only fear and love and we must choose one. Well, I know that can be easy to say, especially when we sit in places of privilege or peace. But we had the very real example this morning that we can be in a place of both fear and love at once. That the things that go bump in the night are not always relegated to fiction. Now, for the most part, I don't live in that kind of fear. I don't live in fear of my citizenship status being revoked or found out. I don't worry about my safety because of my skin color. I do, I will admit, live with a certain amount of anxiousness about my sexual orientation. I'll admit to being reluctant to being outed in certain circumstances, like when I'm going to be receiving medical care from someone I don't know. But for the most part, in my current life, my fears are pretty manageable. Now, our reading suggests that love and fear can't coexist. I know what the authors are saying, but that fear is still going to be present sometimes, even in places of love. But we have to manage it. We have to be in control of it, like we kids did back then when we clamored for another stanza of that Goblins Will Getcha poem. Because when I sat at that rally on Friday, hearing the words of mostly Latino people as they spoke of their fears, I didn't feel like love wasn't there. It was. Love was in the willingness for people to stand up for what they believed in, to show up in that space despite their fears of violence, to comfort one another in that moment. Fear and love can coexist, but the trick is we have to operate primarily out of that place of love. And that's what's hard to do. We have to acknowledge and manage our fears, and we have to respond with love. Our fears are so often based in loss because we fear losing the things we love. As we've seen, autumn is that time when humans have historically chosen to think about loss and fear and love. As winter approaches, humanity has considered, going way back, what it means to honor those who've gone before, whose spirits sometimes seem to be more present in our imaginations in the longer nights, cooler temperatures and skeletal trees, as with the pagan holiday of Samhain, when a place is left at the table for the souls of the dead to partake in the holiday feast. Halloween invites us to recognize that human beings are sometimes afraid, and that's okay, and we can even dress up in costumes and be silly about it. And we can be thoughtful about it, as with the traditions of All Souls and All Saints Day and the Day of the Dead. We can light candles for those we have loved. We can feel the sense of the unknown around us. We can lean a little bit into our fears, dance a dance with the things that go bump in the night. And through all of this, there can be love. Love and fear may be at the opposite end of the spectrum, but nonetheless, they are both human emotions, and thus we are bound to feel them both. So our mission is to discover how to manage them. Are we going to operate out of a place of fear or love when faced with challenges? Are we going to find ways to ground ourselves in love so we can healthily engage with our real fears? Are we going to face with honesty the losses in our lives so that we can also remember the love that was part of those losses? Scary stuff, right? I mean, this is really the real stuff that goes bump in the night. And how to answer that call to love when someone plows a car into a crowd? How to answer that call of love and not fear when those in power say yet another thing that undermines the worth and dignity of those we care about? Well, it isn't easy. It'd be easier to stay in a place of fear, to really believe that the sky is falling, the mummy and the vampires are coming, the goblins are going to get you. But I think the bridge between love and fear is curiosity. When questioned about why she'd chosen to write about the very things that scared her so much as a child, Anne Rice said, "I'm always looking. I'm always asking questions." Curiosity. It's curiosity that allows the child to explore the darkness of life through the metaphor of fairy tales. Curiosity of the unknown that informs all these autumn holidays we've been talking about. It's curiosity that allows people across divisions to find common ground. When I find myself reacting in anger and fear to a situation, I try to stop on my best days and be curious. What more do I need to know? Why is it affecting me this way? What could be different that could help me respond differently? So what we do here in church community week after week, especially in a UU congregation, is cultivate our curiosity. We don't claim to have all the answers, not by a long shot. We have questions, lots of them, and questions are our salvation. because they stop us from simply sitting in a place of fear, and they invite us to answer them in love. So I don't know, maybe James Whitcomb Riley's right. The goblins might get you if you don't watch out. And we can define goblins in today's world in very specific ways. They might be marching at a white nationalist rally or in the White House. As Riley's poem says, when the blaze is blue and the lamp wick sputters and the wind goes woo-woo, and you hear the crickets quit and the moon is gray and the lightning bugs in dew is all squenched away, you better mind your parents and your teachers fond and dear, and cherish them that loves you, and dry the orphan's tear, and help the poor and needy ones that cluster all about, or the goblins will get you if you don't watch out. Watching out means paying attention. And to really pay attention, we need to be curious. During the season of curiosity of the space between light and darkness, the shadow space, let us be inspired by the courage of those who have come before to face the things that go bump in the night. And let us meet those bumps with the eternal power of love.